And now here we find ourselves in this negative feedback loop. And sleep is one of the main drivers for, again, poor dietary habits, just as poor dietary habits is one of the main drivers for poor sleep. Let's go.
The most energetic, fit, and stress-resilient people on the planet practice daily habits to keep their hormones balanced, their gut healthy, and their muscles and mind strong. Welcome to That Fitness Couple. We're Mike and Corey Beth Lepowski, founders of Pure Physique.
This podcast is designed to provide you with everything we've discovered and continue to discover about nutrition, training, and lifestyle. Today, we all live hectic lives.
So we've made it our mission to make your fitness time efficient and to build you up. Hope you share and enjoy. Let's dive into today's episode. Let's go.
Are you sleep deprived and you don't even know it? I was. I was definitely very sleep deprived. And I think the biggest lie that we tell ourselves are things like, I don't really need a lot of sleep, or I can function on less sleep. At least those are a lot of the things that I told myself. Today, we're going to dive into this topic of sleep, but don't tune out yet, because the way that Mike has put this together to present it, I think is so beautiful and actually compelling. We're not just going to say sleep is good for you. He's going to talk about how sleep deprivation affects fat loss, muscle, and performance. So Mike, this is a talk that we've recently gave for two professional groups of people. I think it was incredibly impactful. So lead us in.
Yeah, well, I think for a lot of people, and you would definitely fall into this category, and myself, I fell into this category also, probably going back about, what, 5 or 6 years ago. Many people, poor sleep, I mean, it's a lot like pushing a boulder uphill. I mean, that's what it looks like. Those of you who have maybe heard the Greek mythology story of Sisyphus, Sisyphus was someone who was condemned by the gods, and what they condemned him to do was to push this boulder uphill for the rest of eternity. And what would happen is every time he would get the boulder to the top of the hill, it would roll back down to the bottom. And I think for many of us, sleep is very much similar in that at the top of that mountain, we have probably the leanest, most muscular, strongest, healthiest version of ourselves, the version of ourselves that performs like a high performance car. The problem is that the boulder we're pushing uphill to reach that version of ourselves is sleep. And what happens is every time we get close to that version of ourselves, it's almost like we get knocked right back down the mountain and have to push that boulder back up. So a lot of what we are going to discuss is around sleep deprivation. And of course, we wanted to not pose this as the positive, this is why you should sleep. You're going to get all these benefits. I think it's going to be more compelling if you hear what's going to happen if you don't start getting better sleep. So we're going to talk again specifically around sleep deprivation. And I want to start with this study. It was Sleep Deprivation, the Effects on Weight Loss and Weight Loss Maintenance. And there have been a lot of studies, but I like this one in particular just because it was a narrative review that is pretty recent, came out in 2022, and it presented the findings from all of these different intervention studies, and it showed the effect of sleep deprivation on eating habits, on metabolic rate, on our hormones, and how it discusses their relevance to weight loss as well as weight loss management. And just some of the takeaways from this, I mean, the first thing they pointed to, which I think is no new news to any of us, is that we need about 7 to 9 hours of sleep a night, right? We've heard that since we were kids. What I thought was interesting, they pointed to some of what we've seen over the course of history.
This is what's mind-boggling.
And in 1910, the average amount of hours of sleep we would get was 9. Fast forward to 1975, that drops from 9 hours down to 7.5 hours. You fast forward to today, and we get an average of less than 7 hours of sleep. And what was really crazy is that a quarter of all adults and children are considered sleep deprived. And they said sleep deprivation actually happens in a 5 to 6 hour window.
That was me.
And I mean, I know
4 to 6, it was like 4 to 6 hours. I was very proud of that. I can function on no sleep.
Well, and part of the reason why for this sleep deprivation, I think ties specifically to you, and that is they cited the main reason being social jet lag. And that is a combination of people on social media today, but it actually goes into what you were talking about when we first had the discussion, which is I don't want to miss out on anything.
Yeah.
Right. You're always afraid that you're going to miss out on things.
Was
afraid that you're always going to miss out on things. And so there is this desire to always stay up, right? Yeah. So that you're on the edge of everything that's going on around you.
We're at this conference. We're at a mastermind together and we should really go to sleep because we're going to work out in the morning, but let's go out. Yeah, sounds amazing. You know,
like exactly.
We're going to lay in our hotel beds and chat all night, you know, and listen, like I do enjoy and love those seasons, right? It's not every single night, but my sleep has never become as important to me now. And I think for you listening, maybe you'll feel the same way by the end of this episode.
So some of the other takeaways that they pointed to was there's higher obesity rates in people who get less than 7 hours of sleep per night. Restricting sleep for 5 days leads to weight gain.
That's mind blowing.
Yeah. And I think that's important because for those people who are on this fat loss journey, you know, we can do all of the things right. We could be eating right. We could be exercising. We could be in a caloric deficit. We could be tracking everything in MyFitnessPal. And then we're wondering, how is it that none of this is working? And if we point to sleep, we could see that, well, if you're that person who is chronically getting 5 hours or less of sleep per night, that's why your weight's not moving. And one of the things that it's very unfortunate and in some ways unavoidable unless something changes, but we know that with shift workers, people that work overnight, with nurses and firefighters and with police officers, all types of first responders who do that kind of shift work, it actually is a major issue for many of them. And this is why in those particular professions, you may see more rapid weight gain over time. And I just know from having those types of individuals in our programs, you know, they're always wondering, like, I'm doing everything right. I'm checking all the boxes. And it's hard because you know that the missing element for them is sleep. To just take it a little bit further, some other things that came out of is sleep deprivation is what's most associated with people who have type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, as well as hypertension, disturbed sleep associated with long-term unhealthy dietary habits. So those people who, you know, typically don't get good sleep or disrupted sleep, I mean, how does that affect your decisions the next day in terms of what you're eating?
Completely. I mean, that was me. It was stay up late, eat pretzels and peanut butter, wake up in the morning, feel terrible, and eat more garbage. So, yep.
Short sleep duration is associated with higher calorie intake. And there's another interesting point that we're going to come back around to regarding that in a little bit. Another piece of research, in this one, researchers found that when the dieters cut back on sleep over a 14-day period, the amount of weight they lost from fat dropped by 55%, even though calories stayed equal. They felt hungrier and less satisfied after meals, and their energy was zapped. So let's just break this down for a moment. I mean, that in and of itself is really compelling evidence for how disrupting your sleep over a 14-day period could disrupt your ability to lose body fat. I mean, here they had two groups of people, and what they said was, hey, this group, right, we're going to basically cut back on how much sleep you get over the course of the next 14 days. However, your diet is going to match the other group that's going to get sufficient sleep. And the difference in fat loss was 55%.
That's crazy.
I mean, that's a significant amount of weight. And again, both groups lost weight. It's just, where are you losing your weight from?
Yeah. Well, I just think to think about it in a different way, it's getting sufficient sleep doubles your ability to lose fat.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible. So with respect to, again, people feeling satisfied and their hunger, I mean, what we know is that these changes in our appetite and how satiated we feel are very specific to hormones, and hormones that they are specifically related to are ghrelin and leptin. And so these are the hormones that regulate our appetite and our caloric intake. So what happens is with sleep deprivation, it lowers our leptin levels and it increases our ghrelin levels. So in effect, sleep deprivation, it lowers our leptin levels and it increases our ghrelin levels. So what happens is when our leptin levels are very low, we don't feel as satiated, right? We feel we get done with a meal and we still feel like we're hungry. So this is people who have leptin resistance, which ties directly to insulin resistance. This is what exactly happens with them is they constantly feel like they need to eat more, or even a big meal is not enough to satisfy them. So we can have that same response just by being sleep deprived. As far as ghrelin goes, that's what signals our hunger. So when we don't get very good sleep, we wake up feeling hungrier.
We're searching the pantry for the easiest thing to eat. I mean, it's true.
Yeah, and then we're hungry throughout the entire day.
Let me just quickly stop there for a second. So for people that feel that way, that was absolutely me. I was looking for a snack or a treat. And in my head, it was like, I have to stay up later to complete this work. What can I eat to give me energy for it? And of course, nothing was necessary, but you're sitting there. I mean, if you're a person that stays up late, whether you're watching TV, doing work on your computer, whatever, your stomach gets to a point where it's digested the food from dinner and you're hungry. It's literally growling. And that was me. So can you change it?
Well, I think that's a nice lead into the next study, which I want to bring a little bit of a positive spin to all of this because this is sounding very negative right now. There was this randomized controlled trial with 80 overweight people who chronically sleep less than 6.5 hours per night. And what they did is they split these people into two groups. So they had the control group, which they said, hey, you guys are going to change nothing about what you're doing. And then this other group, they termed them the sleep extension group. And the sleep extension group, the goal was to get these people to sleep 2 more hours per night. Mm. And they just brought a multitude of different interventions, coaching, whatever they can do to help these individuals get the extra 2 hours of sleep per night, which would have put them at 8.5 hours on average. So even with all these interventions, they got them to sleep an average of 1.2 hours more per night, which equals out to 70 minutes per night. And even with that 70 minute increase, that group of people consumed 270 less calories per day. Wow. So they changed nothing, and yet they wound up eating less calories. So yes, there's our positive spin on why we want to get better sleep, because it is a question of if somebody is staying up later, are they more inclined to eat more? Yes, they are. But even if they're cutting off their calories at the same time, but getting that extra 70 minutes a night, during the course of the next day, they're going to consume 270 calories less, which may not sound like a significant amount, but that is what adds up over time. So you think about the opposite, right? If you're over consuming, say, round numbers, 300 calories per day over the course of a week, that's going to be an extra 2,100 calories. And then over the course of 2 weeks, that gets you to just over 1 pound of fat added.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't always work out that way. And, all of my science nerds out there know that, okay, Mike, regulation of metabolism and type of food and all that matters. And it absolutely does. But when we do look at this from this very simplistic point of view, it makes sense as to why when somebody does become sleep deprived, why they're more likely to gain weight.
Yeah.
Or when somebody is sleep deprived, why they may have such a challenge losing body fat versus the person who says, hey, I'm going to eat well and I'm going to work on my sleep. Big difference.
It's a recipe for success. Well, I think that, and we've said this before, our body is smarter than us. Our body is going to get what it needs regardless of what we give it. And when we have these deficiencies in sleep, there's hormone deficiencies, there's nutrient deficiencies. And I remember years ago when I first started studying nutrition, we're going back like 14 years, it's that people who chronically experience stress typically, and that's generalization, but typically will go for sugar. So increased levels of cortisol can lead to filling in that deficiency with sugar, whereas people that struggle with sleep tend to go for salty things. And I don't know if it's an electrolyte imbalance. I don't know what happens on that micro level. But I remember reading that and I was like, oh my gosh, why do I always want pretzels or chips and dip at night when I stay up? I'm not looking for something sweet. I was looking for something salty. And I remember bringing that to a lot of clients. They're like, oh, that's so crazy. Now, again, it's a generalization and I don't have the science to back that. But what I can say is when we have a deficiency somewhere, our body is going to make up for it somewhere else. And that's how intuitive and smart our bodies are. You can't cheat your body.
Well, it's interesting also that you bring up cortisol because, again, disrupted sleep, what does it do? It causes rises in cortisol levels. So a lot of this, it makes sense. And it's going to be very apparent to a lot of people who are watching or listening to this that all of this works cyclically. Again, I've used the term negative feedback loop many times before. And what that means is, again, when we do one negative thing, what does it do? It leads to another negative thing. And then that perpetuates that other negative thing. And now here we find ourselves in this negative feedback loop. And sleep is one of the main drivers for, again, poor dietary habits, just as poor dietary habits is one of the main drivers for poor sleep. So it's a really, really difficult situation that people will find themselves in, that you need to address this. You can't just leave this alone and say, oh, well, you know, this is just the way it is. And I get it. There's going to be some people who, because they're shift workers and what have you, this is going to be much more of a challenge. And honestly, it's like my heart goes out to those individuals more than anyone else, because I know that they're the ones who will try to do all the right things and yet still struggle. But when it comes to muscle development, a lot of the story is the same as it is with fat loss, which is, you know, what you don't do as far as sleep goes can have a far greater effect than all the things that you might be doing right. In this study titled The Effect of Acute Sleep Deprivation on Skeletal Muscle Protein Synthesis and the Hormonal Environment, it looked at how sleep deprivation affected muscle protein synthesis, or in other words, the process that's going to lead to muscle growth, right? So with our resistance training workouts, what are we trying to do? We're trying to stimulate muscle protein synthesis, and then we just do the best job we can of loading ourselves up with protein over the next 24 hours so that we can take full advantage of that muscle protein synthesis. But the takeaways from this study was, number one, chronic sleep loss creates a catabolic environment, meaning we are doing everything that goes against what we're trying to do here. You know, catabolism is eating away, whereas anabolic would be building up. It increases the risk of metabolic dysfunction and loss of muscle mass and function. Less than a week of sleep restriction can impair muscle function. And this one's crazy. Just one night of sleep deprivation can blunt muscle protein synthesis. And then lastly, for my gentlemen out there, sleep deprivation lowers our testosterone levels.
It's something you wouldn't normally think about when you're thinking about maintaining or building muscle mass. Yes, I think that naturally we think of resistance training and we think of our nutrition. Sleep is not typically something we'd put in there. And I think that awareness or recognition now, like now that you know that, you can't unknow that. And so it is something to consider. I mean, if that's important to you, and whether you're a male or a female, it absolutely should be important to you, because preserving as much muscle going into our latter years is our own insurance policy. It's what helps us to be balanced and not fall and be able to be strong, to pick things up like our kids and then our grandkids and everything else. It's muscle mass is, it's equally important to have resistance training, nutrition, and sleep. That to me, I think, was really eye-opening.
Well, I'll tell you who did know this, which was bodybuilders back in the 70s who said that the key to building muscle was to lift weights and have good nutrition and get 8 hours of sleep a night. And I remember, you know, when we were going to bodybuilding competitions, you know, talking with one of the competitors who just happened to be one of the top competitors in the world. I mean, his advice was so basic. It was, I train this many times a week, I work this hard at it, I eat this many meals, and I sleep 8 hours every single night, and I do that every single day for years. Like that's it. I mean, like it really is that basic, but that's the challenge for people. People would rather be complicated and, you know, more complicated and less simplistic, because then at least it gives a good excuse for not succeeding at it. But in this case, we see that, you know, the key is really getting that rest. I mean, how else is your body going to fully repair from a workout if you're, you know, you can do, let's just say this, you can do a ton of damage, and I mean this in a good way, provide your body with a ton of muscle damage that would ultimately lead to these great increases in muscular size and strength. But if recovering from that requires 8 hours and you're consistently giving yourself 5.5 or 6, how long is it going to take to recover from that and any other subsequent workouts, right? I mean, and that's really how we have to look at it, is like, if my workout's that effective, but it takes this long to recover from it, how much are we actually providing to allow that second half of the equation to play out?
I think that sleep deprivation then maybe could be compared to picking off a scab. You know, it's your body wants to repair, your body wants to heal. And it's every time that we sell ourselves short with sleep, it's literally like picking that scab off. Like, the body's got to work that hard to heal up again. You know, it's, you, the scab is there for a reason. Sleep is important for a reason.
Absolutely.
Hey, we hope you're enjoying our show and finding it valuable. If you could do us a quick favor, it would mean the world to us. Please take a moment to rate and review our podcast on your favorite platform. Your reviews help us reach more people and share our message. Plus, we'd love to hear your feedback. Thanks for being awesome and supporting us. Now, back to the show.
The last one was sleep and performance. And so just a couple quick bullet points on this one. Reducing sleep by 90 minutes decreases daytime alertness by 32%.
Yep, that was me.
Sleep deprivation increases anxiety and irritability.
Yep.
And then reduce reaction time, attention, and memory.
For me, like in a previous podcast, you were like, okay, you changed your habits because of new information. For me, it wasn't the muscle. It wasn't the bodybuilders. I didn't even know about fat loss and the impact of fat loss, you know, tied to sleep. What it was for me was seeing a sleep-deprived brain.
Ooh.
I remember, so I studied psychology, and it was years later, I was going back through books. I was looking for something, and it was like, here's a picture of a well-slept brain, and it was this beautiful, like, brain. And then there was a sleep-deprived brain, and on this brain scan, I don't know if it was a CAT scan or what it was, but there were literally, like, holes in the brain. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, that's why I can't focus. And that's why I have a hard time remembering, recalling, you know, giving my focus to something. And listen, being an educator, I remember kids that would come in that didn't get a good night's sleep. There was no way they were retaining anything that I was teaching. I mean, these cute little kids that sit at the desk and they put their head down, who would fall asleep. You're not learning. You're not in a learning state. So just think about life, you know, school is one thing. Life is another thing. And that really was me. It was reaction time, attention, memory, irritability. You could throw anxiety a little bit in there, you know, and I was definitely not alert. So no, you can't function on less sleep. You can't cheat your body.
Well, and then what happens is when you wake up less alert, what do you start doing? You start consuming as much coffee as you can.
Yep.
And you're just doing that throughout the day, which, all right, then let's get into how do we get better sleep? What are the things that we could be doing, right? You guys presented a compelling case for how my sleep deprivation is destroying my health and fitness. What do I do about it? So let's get into that. So the first thing is keeping a regular sleep schedule. So that means being very consistent with the time that you go to bed and the time that you wake up. Corey Beth, you know that, you know, I am very adamant about when it's time to go to bed, and I will leave the dishes in the sink. I will leave the house totally upturned. I do not care. That is not as important to me in that moment as making sure that my head is hitting that pillow within the next 10 minutes.
Literally to the detriment of our house sometimes. I wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, the front door was unlocked, the garage was left open, but Mike got his sleep. So here's what I'm going to give for the women that maybe are, or the men too, that are like, you know, got to make sure the house is locked up and everything is good. It's for me, it's just making sure that I start that routine ahead of time. It's making sure that I'm focusing on the now. You know, I would let dishes pile up in the sink and then it's 10 o'clock and I'm like, oh shoot, I got to clean this whole kitchen. And that's, you know, another 45 minutes to an hour. You know, for me, it was just focusing on, okay, like I dirtied a pan, like clean it now and get those things done throughout the course of either the morning or when you get home from work in the evening. And maybe giving up, choosing to give up the Netflix thing. I mean, there's so many times that you will sit and unwind with a book, a series, like something, but it's like, whether or not that series is over, he sees the time on the clock and he's shutting it off. I'm like, how do you stop in the middle of a series? But that's how committed you are to your sleep. Where for me, I'm like, okay, it's important to me to like go and check the house, the kids, the kitchen, lunch prepared for the next day, whatever it is. And so I will choose to forego that thing or not be part of that to ensure that the house is, you know, locked.
Next up. Sleep in a dark room. I mean, this one is huge, and it ties into the next point, which is reducing exposure to artificial light. So again,
sorry. I think of like sometimes I'm like, dropping it on my head, you know?
Absolutely.
Very important.
I mean, the sleeping in a dark room, this is where if you get blackout shades, that's probably the best thing you could do. It's one of the things that I love most about when we are at hotels is it could be 8:30 in the morning, the sun could be beaming through that window, but because of the awesome blackout shades that they have, it may as well be midnight.
I know what I'm getting you for your birthday.
I mean, listen, I would absolutely love that. But yeah, you know, making your room as dark as possible, that's huge. The reason why I said it ties into the next one, which is reducing exposure to artificial light, is because the things that we should be avoiding before going to bed are watching television, being on our phones, being in front of a computer, gaming, I mean, you name it, all of that exposure to artificial light is a major disruptor to our sleep.
Well, and I think it's important to tie in why, like why that actually disrupts our sleep. Because you'll hear that all the time, like, you know, reduce exposure to blue light and all this stuff. What actually happens is when we're exposed to that blue light, our body doesn't produce melatonin. So melatonin is something that's naturally occurring as a hormone in your body. And a lot of people will take melatonin. But the problem with taking synthetic hormone melatonin is that half of people, it doesn't even work on. So if you're a person that's like, yeah, I've tried melatonin and like nothing happened, half, 50% of people are, it doesn't work. What is that called? They're
resistant.
Thank you. They're melatonin resistant. The other half become melatonin dependent because when we take something that our body naturally produces or creates and we give it to our body, what does our body say? I don't have to produce that anymore. I don't have to create that. And so now we're dependent on melatonin and you wake up with melatonin hangover. You don't feel as good the next day and you're groggy. So my advice is don't take melatonin. You know, the better thing than taking melatonin is turn this stuff off. Take the cable box out of your bedroom. Get the TV out of your bedroom. You don't need the television to fall asleep at night. You know, if you can remove that stuff, you're going to give your body the opportunity to produce melatonin naturally. And it takes a little bit of time if you're not doing that regularly to get your body to start producing it. But that's a natural process in our body that's blunted by blue light.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, even the lamps and things like that are hi hats. All that stuff should be turned off or turned down significantly at night. I mean, we should not be exposing ourselves to even that light as much as we probably do.
I want to give one more experiment for everybody at home. They're like, ah, I don't think it has that much of an impact. LEDs and televisions are so damaging to our bodies and our brains. And what I would love for you to do is take your phone, put on your camera, and then put on slow motion video. And then take that slow motion video and aim it at your artificial lighting in your house, so your lights, or aim it at your TV. And what you're going to see happen when you play back that slow motion video is your TV is not a fluid video, which maybe you've known this, but I think when you can see this, it's very compelling to turn that off at night. It's your TV is flashes of pictures. And literally when the kids saw that, they're like, that's what we're watching. Like, that's what you're watching. But your brain can't process like the speed at which those pictures are flashing. So it looks like a fluid motion of video, but it's thousands of images that flash. And the same thing with lights. I mean, we've gone out to restaurants and the kids will do this trick where they'll move their hand like this and it almost looks like slow motion. So for those that are listening on the podcast, if you just put your hand in front of you and shake it really fast side to side with those LED lights that are just flashing light, it's a pulse of light. So those pulses of light are severely disruptive to your brain's ability to calm down, shut down, and produce melatonin. So check that out. I think that's actually pretty fascinating and cool thing. And it can lead into a whole teaching, you know, if that's your thing. And if it's not, like, just show your kids and be like, whoa, that's crazy. That's why we turn off the TV at night, guys.
Yeah. And so that's huge. And then the next thing would be to have a wind down routine to, you know, get yourself prepared for bed. Too many of us do go right from the couch watching television to going to bed. And then we're wondering, like, why am I struggling to do this? And again, it's because, number one, we're exposing ourselves to the light. And then also what we're exposing our brains to before we go to bed makes a huge difference. So having that routine in which, you know, hopefully most of us are brushing our teeth before we go to bed, that should be part of your routine. But, you know, I personally like just sitting in bed for 10 minutes or so, reading, you know, prayer before bed. For some people, for you, oftentimes it's taking a warm bath. So a warm bath or a shower, you know, any combination of those things. But like your wind down routine, if it takes you 15 minutes to 30 minutes, that's actually great. Because again, that gives you a little bit of a gap between that exposure you may have had to watching your Netflix series, or whatever else you're doing, working right up until bedtime. You need that space. And it helps to prepare your brain as well as your body to get that rest. The next one is setting your room temperature to 60 to 67 degrees. At least that's the recommendation. I'll tell you what, most experts that I've listened to or watched on this, teach on this subject, say the closer to 60 degrees, the better. Like the cooler, the better.
Are you so glad that you live with me?
Oh, yeah.
So our electric bill and gas bills, I'm sure everyone has been absolutely out of control. And I'm like, we keep the house at 66. And it's funny, I put something on Facebook and people were like, that's actually kind of high. And I'm like, what? Like, that's high? Well, we're also walking around our house in short sleeves, you know? So we reduced it to 64. And just recently, don't tell Mike, I've reduced it to 63 during the day, you know, and it's to get as close. But would you say in the last couple of weeks that your sleep has improved? Because mine definitely has, having it cooler, especially at night.
No, because I was getting good sleep to begin with. I mean, you know, you need a lot of these interventions.
Are my hands freezing right now?
But no, again, yeah, keeping it, I've always believed in keeping the room cool. And I think we've always done a pretty decent job of that. It hasn't been, you know, what you're describing during the day is very different at night. At night, I'm okay when I'm under my comforter and all that stuff in sleeping in a cool room. You're talking about keeping it uncomfortably cold all the time. There is a big difference between the two.
The boys had friends over the other day and I was like, are you guys cold? They were like all cuddled up on the sofa. We're like, all right, we'll turn up the heat a little bit.
They also run around with shorts and t-shirts on nonstop.
True. Well, let's talk about what to do during the day to really help feed sleep at night.
Yeah, and I think this is very interesting because most people don't think about what they're doing during the day impacting the way they're going to be sleeping that night. But one of the top ones is always limiting caffeine or at least having a specific cutoff time. And that's because, you know, the half-life of coffee, I mean, for most people, it takes about 6 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. The half-life of coffee is about between 2 and 4, but to get it completely out of your system, I mean, you're talking at least 6 hours. Mm. And so if you're the person who's like, oh, it's 3 o'clock, I got to have a cup of coffee. I mean, you're really setting yourself up to have poor sleep.
Yeah.
And I get it that there are those who believe that they can drink a cup of coffee and then go to bed. I am one of those people. I can go out to the restaurant, have a double espresso and fall asleep. However, even though you can still fall asleep, research shows us that there's still a disruption to your sleep patterns. Yeah. So although you can fall asleep, that doesn't mean you're getting quality sleep. And so for that reason, I mean, that was a big, big change for me going back to last year, which was learning to cut myself off before noon. And now even just being more conscientious of how much coffee that I'm drinking or how much caffeine I'm consuming. I know for those people who work out late in the day, you know, they may want to do an energy drink or some type of pre-workout, but understand that doing that is severely disrupting the sleep that you're trying to use to recover from that workout. So
yeah,
there's that. Next would be stop eating about 3 hours before bedtime. I know in our modern society that may be a little bit more difficult for people who maybe they get home late, they're trying to have dinner with their family or just dinner in general. So they're eating very late. But I think the takeaway here is as great of a gap as you can put between the time you go to bed and when you had your last bite of food, this does not mean that you necessarily ate dinner. What I'm saying is even that snack that usually comes after dinner that you're having, it's from that time until you go to bed that matters most. Yeah. So, I mean, it would serve a lot of people probably in general to just cut themselves off earlier in the day from consuming any further calories.
Well, and I think the quality of food is really important to address here too. You know, if you're like, okay, I'm getting home late from sports and work and whatever, like I only have an hour or 30 minutes between having dinner and bed. It's the quality of food we choose at that point is incredibly important. So for me personally, in those moments where the kids are out late and doing things, I'm not going to have bread because that's going to literally like what you are, maybe a little bit what you eat. You get doughy, you know? So for me, if it's that later meal where I'm like, gosh, I'm really, really hungry and, you know, I'm going to go to bed soon, I'll have a protein shake or I'll have eggs, like some form of protein. So for those people that maybe are like, I can't always do that, just choose protein. And I think that's a better choice.
Absolutely. Don't drink alcohol before bed. And again, that ties very similarly into that last one where a lot of people, again, their wind down routine includes a glass of wine, a cocktail, you know, a beer, you name it. But we know alcohol is a disruptor to that sleep as well. And then the last one is eat healthier and exercise, or as we like to say it, just lift weights and eat meat.
Thanks for tuning in. If you're a busy working parent like us, you understand the daily challenges. Our mission is to make exercise and nutrition simple and exciting, helping you and your family thrive even on the busiest days. We've got a fantastic free 5-day online challenge that's tailor-made for super busy people like you.
If you like a high-vibe workout environment with professional coaching, swing by one of our franchise studios for a free intro workout.
Check the show notes for details or head on over to purephysique.com when you have a moment. We know those moments are rare.
Until next time, lift weights, eat meat, and never forget, you were created on purpose for a purpose. I'm just going to do that whole part then over again.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.